From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I want to make darn sure you guys are paid. You guys are paid on time. You don't miss any payroll, and you're paid 100% of your salary, not some lesser amount.
This really is the barest bones of a temporary budget, one-month budget, and that's the intent. It's just to try to protect the most vulnerable citizens, as well as providing, you know, making sure we have troopers on the state streets and, you know, Department of Corrections employees in place.
This budget, 1 month, we don't need a one-month fix. Illinois is fundamentally broken and needs substantial reform.
Those of us who are going to work today to keep government open will hopefully get what we want by keeping government open, but we'll also learn who wants a government shutdown and who thinks that it's okay to accept that kind of human harm to achieve a different political purpose.
Change is hard. Change is hard. This was always going to be hard, but we need to have change. If all we do is keep the status quo, and if all we do is just raise taxes to cover up the status quo, we'll continue in our long-term slow decline.
Governor Bruce Rauner telling a group of state employees he wants them to get paid, and then turning around telling reporters why a shutdown might be worth it. Illinois begins its fiscal year without a new budget in place. We also heard there from Democratic State Senators Daniel Biss and Heather Staines and Republican State Senator Matt Murphy arguing for and against a one-month budget deal. We'll talk about that and more this week on State Week. I'm Brian Mackey. Bill Wheelhouse is away. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, from the State Capitol Building, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, and from WBEZ, Tony Arnold, State Government Reporter for Chicago's public radio station. Tony, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, Amanda, why don't we start with you? There was a hearing in the House this week where they sort of outlined what the effects of a potential shutdown might be. We saw some empty chairs. Let's just kind of take this week chronologically and maybe start with that. Talk a little bit about, the House Democrats had called a hearing to try and figure out what a potential shutdown might look like. How did that go?
There were actually two sets of empty chairs, and maybe I'll point that out before we get to the full shutdown, just to set the tone for things of where we're at. There had been a small House hearing, and this was yet again Democrats attempting to really scold the Rauner administration or make them look bad. They say this is really fair. They're just exploring all avenues of state spending at a time when clearly Illinois' budget is tight or doesn't even exist, and they tried to bring in the governor's office to talk about salaries that are being paid. And yet again, nobody from the governor's office showed up at this hearing. And instead, there was a letter that I could summarize as snarky, and that would be a monster understatement. That was what got things rolling on Tuesday when the General Assembly came in, and I unfortunately don't have it in front of me, or I would love to read a couple of lines. Maybe we'll post that online or something so that people can get a good read. But there was that. Then there was the full committee of the whole hearings before the Illinois House, where it was, again, supposed to be a whole lot of directors from the Rauner administration that representatives said they wanted to know, what are your plans if we don't have a budget in place? And of course, that's how things turn out. How are you going to go forward? How is the state going to continue to provide services? Yet again, none of the agency directors appeared. So Democrats were ticked about that. We did have the budget director, Tim Newding, and Jason Barclay. He is the chief general counsel for the Rauner administration. They made an appearance and they said, we're managing, we're trying. And so that really, like I said, I just point this out because as we have this parade of individuals that then told members of the Illinois House how bad things were going to be, how people wouldn't have services, how elderly people were going to no longer have home care and have to go to nursing homes and that'd be more expensive. Parents of, you know, autistic children being fearful that the progress their kids have made was going to retreat. kind of really some sad stories. You had all of that, but none of the agency directors were there. And a lot of fighting really continues between the Republican governor and Democratic legislators.
So, you know, yeah, it's kind of difficult if you're the legislature, you want to try and embarrass the executive branch. You call them before a committee or the entire House to testify. It's a little difficult to achieve that goal when they don't actually bother to show up. Tony, I want to turn to you. So the Democrats did pass a full budget, albeit somewhat underfunded. Can you just update us on exactly what happened to that landed on the governor's desk and he took some action in the past couple weeks on that?
Yeah. So about a month ago, Democrats passed a budget to keep government open. That said, it was about $4 billion or so, spending more than what the state's actually bringing in for the next year. And this kind of what set everything off about a week ago here was that the governor signed their plan to keep schools open and running and funded so that they in August, you know, would be able to actually take in students. But everything else was vetoed and in a very kind of dramatic way. It was just kind of thrown out there in the middle of the afternoon. And so with that veto, then that effectively put us on the path that we're on now toward this shutdown that we're in the middle of or progressing toward, I guess I should say. And as a result, that led to a little bit more action legislatively this week. The House of Representatives and the Senate tried to take up temporary budget bills or a way to fund at least some government services for the next month. And what you saw with those votes is that even though these were proposed by the Democrats and the Democrats have the supermajority in the Senate, they were able to pass that without Republican support. In the House, though, there were some absences on the Democratic side of the aisle, and the Republicans did not get on board with it. So without that, that bill failed, which means that we're continuing on the path toward the shutdown.
You know, Tony, I was intrigued. You and I both had a chance to see the governor at the Illinois Emergency Management Agency this week. He was addressing some employees there. You think back to during the campaign. At one point, he had said, you know, hey, if we got to shut the government down, so be it. We got to make some progress. And his message had really changed by the time he was face-to-face with these state employees, right?
You even heard that from his budget director, who says he's taking issue with the term shutdown, and that this isn't really going to look like that. Look, as dramatic as maybe the word implies. So you have this kind of it's not just semantics, though. I think there are some practical questions about what this is going to look like. The governor was there at this emergency management building, talking to a room full of state workers, basically saying, look, I think you guys can keep getting paid. I think you can keep working. I think that's going to be in dispute here, and it's going to be up to the courts to decide whether that's actually the case, whether the governor has in his mind a very dramatic display of a shutdown, saying, look, I can't get cooperation for what I want to do or what I was elected to do from the Democrats, and as a result, here's all this chaos, or whether this is other side of whether, you know, he thinks that there's some government that can still be working. It doesn't have to be this big dramatic show. But he can still say, well, you want these services provider, get those Democrats on board over there. So it's you're hearing kind of the two different things here from that side.
It's a fascinating dynamic because, Brian, you're right. He'd said, you know, shut down if need be. And is this the governor trying to show that, no, I'm not caring. I'm the one. And that way, and blame it on the Democrats. Democrats say, that's bunk. The governor had the opportunity if he didn't want a shutdown. Not only could Republicans have gone along with this effort for a temporary budget, but further, the governor full out vetoed the 19 budget bills. He did not reduce them or reduce certain line items and therefore bring about the balanced budget that we hear him talking about so much, or even portions of the budget that don't rely on the general revenue fund. I mean, he could have had a lot of options. That's what Democrats say. They say for him to pretend to be the savior of state employees is a hilarious notion. It also comes as the governor, who we all know and have heard his stance and his take on unions, nonetheless has come to a one-month extension of the current contract for AFSCME. So that is going for the month of July. Is it a change in tune from the governor? Is it that he doesn't want services to be shut down because he is, after all, the state's chief executive, and saying shutdown is one thing, living it is another? Or is it just a matter of time that, you know, work with the employees, work with the union, keep things going for the month of July, and then if this continues, then you see more of the gloves peeled off? We don't know.
Charlie, last week we had Chris Mooney, our former panelist, was filling your chair while you were away. And one of the things he said is that he was a little disappointed that the governor signed the education budget, because that could have been a forcing mechanism to try and bring a deal about. I mean, do you, and now we've seen, so the schools are, you know, one of the big threats we'd heard is that, oh, the schools won't be able to open on time. People will really start paying attention to state government then. Now the schools, you know, seem like they'll be able to open on time, most of them anyway. And now, you know, if state employees start getting paid, are we even really going to have a shutdown? Is there any reason to have, can we just limp along indefinitely here?
Well, I don't think we can limp along indefinitely. And I suspect one of the reasons the governor signed the education funding bill was because he realized, were he to veto it, it would be very clear that he's the guy who's going to be wearing the jacket when August rolls around and the schools don't open, or some of the schools don't. Some schools would have the resources to open without any help from the state. But the poorest schools in the schools that rely more heavily on state aid than school districts in property wealth areas, those schools might not open. And the governor would be blamed. The Democrats would say, we provided money for the schools. You're the guy who vetoed it. So I think that's why he signed it, because that would be a very difficult position to be in.
Does that ultimately make it harder to get a deal, though?
Well, I don't know if it will. One of the things that I find different and kind of distressing this time around is it's almost like a game of chicken. Instead of people sitting down and saying, okay, let's do what's best for the people of Illinois. Everybody knows we need more revenue. The governor's conceded as much, but the governor says, you have to give me my anti-union agenda before I will give the revenue that the state needs. Why can't we just kind of split the difference and do some of the things, make some of the changes to workers' compensation, unemployment insurance, things like that, and move forward? I think it's gotten into a matter of personalities and this challenge of wills and who's going to be the most macho of the group. And I think it's kind of juvenile. And I, as somebody who's watched this stuff for a long time, I can't remember having a situation like this in the past. There were standoffs, there were differences of opinion, but there was never this level of animosity and this level, as Amanda said earlier, this kind of disrespectful snarkiness, snottiness on all sides. The level of incivility is amazing to me, and it's far greater than any of the times in the past that I saw over the course of 40 years. And I think it's Washington, D.C., that toxic atmosphere permeating Illinois politics.
Tony, do you get that sense walking around the Capitol this week talking to people that there really is this sort of animosity bubbling under the surface or right on the surface, however you want to phrase that?
I think the examples I can point to is just looking at this gets into the issue of who do the people in charge there at the State House want a shutdown? Is this something that they actually have been actively going toward, as they say publicly, no, we don't want a shutdown? And on that front, you know, I think you have to look at sort of how this whole budget process has played out over the last several months, beginning with the governor's own budget address and what he proposed, which was just severe cuts across the board, almost across the board, I should say, to services, almost all services of state government, and that was roundly rejected by a lot of people for being out of balance or having relying on ideas that were not going to be supported or even potentially constitutional, and so that's kind of, when you look at that side of where this began on the Republican side of things. And then you look and see what the Democrats ended up passing a few months later that was ended up being vetoed by the governor. That, you know, on that front, too, it was a Democratic budget. It was did not have Republican support. I wonder how much even Republicans had input on what was passed. And so I don't think that these sides have even been talking about what the budget should even look like. And without that, then this gets into, well, do people actually want this shutdown, or is this animosity, as we're saying, is so strong that they're willing to say, okay, well, we can't even agree on what to spend or what to pay people, so let's just see who blinks first.
Yeah, and I don't mean to imply that the animosity extends to the rank and file lawmakers. The animosity is at the top. It's the governor and his top aides. It's Madigan and Cullerton in the Democratic leadership. But the men and women who are sitting on the floor of the House and the Senate don't have the same. I suspect they're probably frustrated, and they wish that these guys at the top would stop acting like jerks.
Hey, Amanda, I wanted to ask you, so just somebody who maybe doesn't follow this as closely, they hear that, well, the Democrats have a supermajority. Why can't, you know, the governor vetoed the budget. Why can't they just override it? Why can't the Democrats just override the governor's budget and push forward on their own?
For two reasons, really. First of which is that in the House, they have the bare number of Democrats that would be needed, 71. And there are, in particular, two, Scott Drury and Jack Franks, who don't typically go along with the caucus. In general, you can have a lot of fracturing within that. Democrats are united by party, but they all are, of course, different individuals and have different districts. Those two, in particular, say they're not going to go along with it. They have some inclination that the state needs to rein in spending and also want further reforms before they'd go along. I should point out that both Drury and Franks did vote with the rest of their party for the temporary budget that the House tried to push through and will try again to do on Wednesday when all of their members are there. It was more Democratic leadership say that the four Democratic legislators were missing and because they don't have any Republicans. So anyway, so that's your first reason, that Franks has said he's not going to vote for it. He's not going to go along with it unless you can convince a Republican in the House. That's just not going to happen. Override. The second reason is a political one in nature, and that would be that not only would Democrats need to pass it, but then in override, or if you look at same question, would flow for a tax increase or sustained more revenue in whatever way that shape that would take form. Democrats don't want to pass that and then send it to the governor for him to veto, and then they'd have to override. That'd look bad. It's politics, really. They don't want to have to wear the collar. They want to share the pain.
This is State Week. Our panel on the program, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and WBEZ's Tony Arnold. I'm Brian Mackey. Tony, there was some other discussion in the State House this week about the Chicago public schools having to make a big pension payment. We heard a lot of Sturm und Drang, I think is the German expression, about how terrible this was going to be leading up to this big deadline. What happened with that?
They made the payment, and in this dramatic way, where it was for weeks we had been hearing Chicago Public Schools is out of money. They can't afford to make a $634 million payment into its pension funds by midnight on June 30th, and so they had at Chicago Public Schools went to the State House and state lawmakers saying we need 40 days. We'll get our act together in 48 days. We'll come up with a plan. We'll figure out the money, and that ended up not passing the House of Representatives, and so that then. Sort of this week, June 30th came. Lawmakers are in session, and the kind of this question was: are you guys going to do anything? Are you not? And in the middle of the afternoon, Speaker Madigan's talking to reporters, and just kind of drops out there. By the way, Chicago Public Schools, I've been told, is going to be making its full pension payment, even though the district had been telling everyone in the State House we don't have the money for it. And lo and behold, a few hours later, they made the payment, and that then led to this huge question of how do you what gets cut as a result of making the $634 million pension payment, in addition to all the other budget issues that the district already has. And so now you're seeing about 1,400 educators being laid off. That's administrators and teachers, in addition to several other cuts to student programs, special needs programs for some special needs students and that kind of thing.
So it would be it would be a mistake to think.
Also, Tony, a situation in which the in essence the school board borrowed money from the retirement fund and then used the money it borrowed from the retirement fund to make the pension payment, and it has to pay it back at an interest rate of 7.5% or something like that percent. I think I read that in one of the newspaper stories.
The Chicago Teachers Pension Fund has been underfunded for about 20 years. It's not the city's not been making its pension payments. That was mostly when, since the city of Chicago got the school district back in its control from state government, and when the city got control of the school system, it stopped making pension payments altogether. Which is why 20 years later, we're now dealing with these issues. I think the other thing that really strikes my mind is that this this $634 million pension payment was not a surprise to the district. They knew that this was due, and they waited until the last minute to go to the state house to begin acting on, okay, we need 40 more days, we need to figure out a plan, that kind of thing. And then and so the fact that that was the strategy and not actually paying it earlier or setting money aside earlier in their own budget, that then led to this narrative that you heard from the school district that this is the state house's fault. The state house didn't give us what we wanted in this 40-day reprieve, and as a result, now all these educators are going to get laid off and X, Y, and Z. And so I think there's some big questions right now for the district to answer about why they waited, and then two, sort of what's the plan going forward here? They have, there's now some legislation that the Senate is introducing, Senate President John Cullerton's introducing, that says that Chicago Public Schools owe $700 million in this next fiscal year. They still don't have the money for that right now. And so there's some legislation about how it's going to deal with that element of this budget in the next in the coming year. There's some major problems with the funding of Chicago Public Schools right now, and there's kind of this big omnibus bill that could address several of those issues and get into what could potentially be some sort of compromise on at least a little bit of the issues from what Governor Rauner wants in terms of what's holding up the rest of this entire budget process. So you're seeing a little bit of this window into the differences between the Democrats and Republicans in this Chicago Public Schools bill that could actually, I suppose, lead to some sort of what a deal could look like for the rest of state government.
Well, and yet that particular legislation that's a huge discussion and includes an overhaul of the spending formula, period. That's something that President Cullerton wants. It's not just Chicago, but, for schools statewide, there's been a furor about that for a long time. What continues to be a holdup is the connection with property taxes and, of course, the issues that it causes for schools. If you're having less money coming into property taxes, Rauner has said he wants a complete overhaul of Illinois' tax structure. So that conversation hasn't even begun, which is interesting because as you're looking at school funding, that's connected, but instead it is once again reliant on the property tax portion because you're ignoring the rest of the revenue part where the other elements of the turnaround agenda are there. And where Republicans say they were appreciate what Cullerton had done, it doesn't include the union components, the prevailing wage, for example, and loosening up what collective bargaining has to be for municipalities. And that's somewhere where Democrats aren't going to give, and I can't imagine. And so you are stuck even with the rest of the complex issues with CPS and all of the rest of the school funding. There's that other element that just isn't going anyway, and it isn't going anywhere.
So I'm glad you brought this back to the state, because one of the things I've been wondering about is, how does this policy difference, the Chicago Public Schools, we had this extension bill and that failed, and you have Senate President Cullerton working with the governor, and then you have the Chicago mayor in there, who Rauner has been a supporter of in the past, but he's also a Democrat, and you have the speaker who traditionally looks out for the interests of Chicago, but not if he's working with the governor, and all these complex web of political arrangements. I don't know, Charlie, do you want to take this? You know, does this spell anything about the future, near future in Illinois, about whether the governor and the Democratic legislative leaders can come to a compromise on these other issues, let alone, you know, this 40-day extension?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, I don't see, aside from the personality standoff here, this who's more macho than who, I think you could put a deal together pretty easily if we had people who were interested in actually making a deal rather than scoring points and, as I say, trying to show who's toughest. Part of it is we've had a governor who's has a different attitude towards unions in general and organized labor than any governor we've had in my lifetime, Republican or Democrat. And he seems to be bound and determined to do everything in his power to use the state's difficulties, the financial problems, and these programs that people rely on for their sustenance and for their well-being as leverage to try and force his anti-union agenda down the throats of Democrats who don't see it the same way. And so this is a whole new dynamic. And I think there are grounds to reach a compromise, to work out a deal on property taxes, to work out a deal on revenue, to work out a deal on maybe changing workers' compensation, to work out a deal on reducing Medicaid expenditures. It's all there, but what it would require is for people to step back and decide, okay, I can't get everything that I want. I will take half a loaf today and come back tomorrow for more.
I think, and what I would add to that is in this Chicago Public Schools bill that was introduced and it was debated for at least a little bit in a Senate committee, and you saw the Republicans bringing up sort of the policy side of the differences between these two sides. And it was clear that the Republicans and the Democrats were not on the same level talking about the same issue. I mean, it was interesting. This was like a 20-minute diversion in this committee talking about should we even have property taxes almost. I mean, there was a Republican, Matt Murphy, was saying, let's eliminate all property taxes and start from scratch because the whole school funding system doesn't work. And this was, you could just see the looks on the Democrats' faces not understanding what he was trying to propose or introduce or anything like that. And so that I think that also just kind of highlights everything else that's going on here in the political debate between the two sides.
Tony, he could not have been serious about that, could he? Eliminate property taxes?
Eliminate property taxes and then find a new way to bring it back and then so that the funding structure for schools would look very different. The point that Republicans
were
trying to make
was— Not necessarily eliminate property taxes,
okay,
but make
I was
the school
say,
system
the
reliant.
Property taxes, not a penny of which goes to state government, bring in more money than the income tax and the sales tax combined. So you're looking at $25 billion of having to replace if you did away with property taxes. So I think he was probably being facetious.
The point that they were making was that we're not calling for a property tax freeze for the sake of freezing it. We're calling it to enact these major reforms that go along with that.
We're going to have to leave it there. That is our time for this edition of State Week. Still so much more to discuss. Thank you to our guest, Tony Arnold of Chicago's public radio station, WBEZ. You can get a podcast of this show at WUIS.org and on iTunes U. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. For Charlie Wheeler and Amanda Vinicky, I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.